Okay, we're going to get started here. As I mentioned this morning, this is the great experiment. Kelly Williams from the NAB, his bio is in the pamphlet, so please read it over. Kelly was to be here in Madison and was fully intending to do that, and an illness cropped up, but he wanted to make sure that he did his presentation. So we're going to do this via WebEx, and Kelly's listening in from Washington, and we'll hand it off to him. So, Kelly Williams.
Hello. Hello, Kent. How are you? Everybody hear me okay?
We hear you.
All righty. Well, thank you very much. I understand that I'm between you and lunch, so let's go ahead and get started. I want to give you guys a Cliff Notes overview of what NAB and CTA has been doing in Cleveland with ATSC 3 testing. First, let me say I'm very sorry that I couldn't make it. I would have been there. The clinic is certainly one of my favorite events to join, but my doctor advised me that I couldn't travel. But that's all right. We have technology, so we're going to go ahead and move forward. Aha. And that was the wrong button. Maybe we're not. All right. So here's what we're going to talk about. I gave you some background on the station and talk a little bit about how it's put together. And just point out a few things. I don't know how much everybody knows about ATSC 3, fundamental things that are different. And that's where some of the challenges lie. Talk about what we've been up to since we've been on the air, particularly in this year. We've done some field tests, and I'll share a summary of those test results as much as we can get through in the time we have allotted. And talk about what we're going to do, and then we'll take some questions. So first and foremost, the test station in Cleveland is a joint effort between NAB and the Consumer Technology Association. For those of you who may not know, they represent the trade association for TV set manufacturers and other consumer products as well. And the point of the station was to sort of redo an effort that occurred for the first digital transition with ATSC 1, which is provide a laboratory open to everybody, where vendors, both professional equipment and TV set manufacturers, could bring in equipment and tinker, and then take it away and come back and tinker again. And that kind of cycle goes over and over. In discussing this, Tribune made just an extraordinary offer. They had a station in Cleveland, which was, I believe, their original analog station, a station facility that was there and being unused. They offered it to us. We just had to help get it up and running, which turns out, and I think it hadn't been used in 15, 20 years. Excuse me. They are definitely our partner 100% in this. We've got two contractors who do the bulk of the work for us. Lead contractor is Mintel, Squignoli, and Wallace. Pretty much everybody knows Dennis Wallace. We just recently bought on Osborne Engineering, which is a local Cleveland consulting engineering firm. It's good to have somebody there in Cleveland, because MSW is remote and I'm remote. I'm based in Washington, D.C. We're not actually in Cleveland. The transmitter building, which was the original studio building, is in Parma, Ohio, which is a suburb. And that's shot on the right, is kind of what Parma looks like most of the time. So I understand for most of you Midwesters, this is normal. I'm a mid-Atlantic person. We don't get -5 and snow and 20 mile an hour winds where I live. If it is, we're pretty much sure that the Earth has come to an end. So here are the vital stats for the station. We have an experimental authorization. It runs through about this time, I guess September, end of September 2019. We're on channel 31. We got an antenna at 1,055 feet. We're using a Comarch transmitter. We are authorized for 600 kilowatts, but we are actually able to make about 437, which has been more than adequate for the tests that we have been doing. Here's a logo collage of the people that have helped us, who are providing equipment to us. One logo I left off there is Aja. We actually purchased Aja equipment, but they've been pretty helpful with us in terms of for some products that they've got. So we are extremely grateful for everybody that you see there. So what's the whole point here, and what's why are we doing this, and what's different? So let me just say at the outset, I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about the RF parts of the physical layer parts of ATSC-3. Fundamentally, that's become fairly well understood, and we were sort of proving out theory. But very briefly, the idea is that ATSC-1 functions one modulation, one set of coding parameters, one operating point, one data rate. And you all know those numbers pretty well. ATSC-3, you have a smorgasbord of combinations of modulation and coding that allow you to go from anywhere from high data rate that's not as robust to a very robust signal that operates in very high noise situations, but it's low data rate. And there's a wide range of numbers in between. So we'll illustrate a little bit of that when we get to the end of the presentation. But one of the things I want to talk about is the challenges that we've had, and where we see we'll be seeing new products coming along. So if you can see my cursor, hopefully you can see that moving around. Up at the top here is kind of the world that we live in now. It's this really simplified conceptual diagram. It's not exactly the way things are, but you start with some content that comes from somewhere. It plays out, and it gets encoded. The video and audio gets encoded. Now, in our world now, pretty much all of this is encapsulated in a single box, the ATSC encoder, and the video and audio encoding, and then somewhere you get PSIP information. The system information tells receiver how to tune, where to find the different pieces. That all gets encoded into what we call currently a transport stream, and that goes out the door to a modulator that's attached to your transmitter. The fundamental parts of that for ATSC-3 remain the same, but there's some added things. So you still have to play out, and we have some new concepts, and the arrows you see there kind of show us the parts that are new and where there's new equipment that sort of have to be contemplated. So first, there's the encoding, HEVC encoding, which is the new encoding stuff, and I'm presuming you just heard about that from Joel. And excuse me, hold on just one second, my phone's ringing. Anyway, and there's also audio encoding, which is Dolby, that happens either there or in an external encoder. That's not that different than what we do now. One of the really new things is adding the concept of dash, or what's called dash packaged or dash encoded video. So dash is a format of video that's used in over the top. It's one of the things that allows ATSC-3 to be a hybrid compatible. So we don't just encode the video, it also has to be what's called dash packaged or put into dash segments. And then there is a root server. So there are two sort of, I'll use the term transport streams. It's not what's used in ATSC3, but it's a way of assembling all the pieces of what will go out to the transmitter. And that's, there are two incarnations that. One is root, the other is MMT. MMT does not use dash packaging. Not all equipment yet supports MMT, so we're starting with dash. And this is where the signaling tables, I'll use the term tables, they're not really tables, it's all HTML5 code, but the tables, the signaling tables that tell the receiver what to do, where to find things, all the information that goes in is put in here. Signal comes out, and it goes into a device called a scheduler. So this is a really new concept for us in ATSC3. For those of you who may have some familiarity with DVB-T2, this has been around for a while. This is a device that tells the modulator what to do. It does some other things. It adds some additional signaling as well. For example, it establishes data that goes in the bootstrap. So these three pieces here are where we've really been concentrating on getting in equipment that we can test. Let's see. There we go. So getting away some of the other stuff here. This is the basic conceptual diagram of what we have going on at the test station. And we have, except for the scheduler, we have a couple of different vendors represented in each of these categories. So here is, just to give a sense of where we started and where we are, the shot on the left of the three racks that were there when we sort of christened the system. The station had been on the air prior to that, just sort of running random data, but that's where we started with what you see on the left. This was taken 2 weeks ago when I was there. We've grown to multiple racks. We have a receiver that's actually a Samsung receiver in the middle there, and quite a bit more equipment. You see we've put in an Aja SDI router because we have multiple playout devices and multiple encoders in there. So the kind of equipment complement we're working with, and the playout encoder dash packager, we've got Aja playout, TEM encoders. They are integrated HEVC and dash packaging in a single unit, and a Dolby AC4 encoder. We have an Ericsson, which is an integrated encoder also, but it's HD only. And we have Harmonic, which in the version of stuff that we own, the dash packager is separate. The video encoding dash packager is done separately, but it does UHD and HD. The root server, we have one, which is done by Trivini. They have taken what was, for those of you who may be familiar with their Guide Builder product, and adapted it for ATSC3. And it's kind of the workhorse of keeping all the pieces together. We have one from another company called ST, which is a European company, and it's on its way, and that product is called an AT Caster. Scheduler, there's only one. There are others out there that we are aware of, but I don't know if they're ready for product, but in terms of being available in the United States, it's a product from a company called Enensis. And then modulators, we've had three, a GatesAir, a Teamcast, and ProTelevision. ProTelevision returned, we had a one-year loaner on that, and we did some tests with that, and then we've returned it. So we have some Korean equipment from two companies, one called DS Broadcast and DigiCap. And these companies manufacture and sell broadcast equipment in Korea. They are currently on the air in Korea, the stations. For those of you who you may or may not know that Korea went on the air back of the first of the year. or before the first of the year, actually, because the government mandated that they wanted HSE3 and 4K TV on the air for the Winter Olympics. There are a bunch of products that are sold. I don't know the status of whether these are available or what their plans are for making these available in the United States, but we do have sort of integrated systems that cover the areas that you see there. Receivers, we've got a couple. As I mentioned, Korea was on the air with ATSC3 for the Winter Olympics in the beginning of this year. And so we've got sets from LG and Samsung. We also have a lab-grade receiver from an organization called ETRI. ETRI is a Korean government research lab. It's actually, I think they are going to commercialize it, and it's we know it actually is named Clever Logic. But it is a lab receiver. It's not a consumer product. It gives you all the data out that you need to do tests. Pretty much everything you think of but video. Sony, you know, it's in the mail, supposedly, but they don't have one available for us yet. And NAB has a product, project. So NAB Pilot is the innovation arm of NAB. And we started on a product to create what we call a gateway, which is essentially a small box. It's pretty much a receiver without a TV screen. And it was built to test out the runtime environment or the additional content, that is applications. And so it's been around for a while, and it was an IP-only device. We're integrating tuners into that box. So as soon as we get that's ready, we'll be adding that to our mix of tuners. So what have we been up to? Well, one of the first thing we did is we got the 2018 Winter Olympics on the air in 4K. We'll talk about that in a second. We did some physical layer tests. So one of the really important things with a new TV system, just like we do with ATSC1, is really to go out in the field and verify that what the theory says actually works. And so we've done some receiver testing. In that receiver testing, since there are only really two in a lab receiver, we were looking for the kinds of performance data you would get in a regular TV set. So we're looking at co-channel, Jason channel rejection, white noise threshold, things like that. And then they all performed pretty well. And we're going to do some LDM testing. LDM stands for layered division multiplexing. And I'll talk briefly about that toward the end. So the Olympics, we got special permission by NBC to go ahead and broadcast that. It was fed to us on SES-1, and it was a C-band feed. And so there was a C-band receive dish in the facility that had not been used in, I believe, 30 years. So we resurrected it. So a large part of this project was getting a C-band dish resurrected and pointing it. So everything was decoded to baseband, and then we re-encoded in ATSC format and transmitted on channel 31. And we received it on one of the Korean ATSC TVs. And that's the video. It's one of the Olympic hockey games. And in that picture there, you see the TV and holding our nice, this is the test station sign. And two guys in that picture on the left there is Dennis Wallace and R.J. Reynolds. R.J. Reynolds, R.J. Russell, who really do the the lion's share of the heavy lifting at that facility. So I'm going to talk a little bit now about the field testing that we did. And I mentioned before, there's an unfortunate rhythm that projects that we seem to always get into, where we do our lab testing in the summer and our field testing in the winter. And we've really been working hard to try not to do that, but it doesn't work out. So these tests were done again around in the beginning of the year. So that's a good day. This was a typical day doing field tests in and around Cleveland. There was a lot of coffee and hand warmers going on there. So just to review a little bit about what our parameters were. We used the facility that I described before, and in terms of, there's a shot of the antenna, and there's a shot of the transmitter. The receive antenna was just a standard consumer sort of rooftop antenna that was directional. There's a picture of the van there. We did measurements at 30 feet and 12 feet, and we used the Etri professional receiver. Again, it's clever logic, and there's a nice shot of that there. Inside of the van, that's what the inside of both vans look like. The basic test program, like I said, we did measurements at two heights, 100 sites, and you see the breakdown of the radials and grids and clusters. And that gave us a good statistically significant amount of data. So in order to make things easier and to go more quickly, we want to test multiple modes, modulation encoding parameters, or what we call it, say, modcod parameters. And in the old days, what we do is go out, do a set of runs, shut the transmitter off, reset it, turn it back on, repeat that set of runs. That's fine if you're doing two different scenarios. We were doing four. And one of the things in ATSC3 is that you can create these things. They're called physical layer pipes. So within one signal, you can have pipes or streams that are coded in different ways to achieve different modulation encoding combinations. So we had four PLPs. That way, transmitter stays on, and we can take measurements. You still have to take four measurements, but there's no waiting to reconfigure the transmitter. So here are the four PLPs, and essentially we did one that was high data rate, delivered about 28 megabits. And its carrier noise was 24 dB. We did one that was like ATSC. That's why it's ATSC1-ish. Not exactly, but 19 megabits and 17 dB signal noise. We looked at a targeted a handheld. So that was sort of led by, again, by its carrier noise threshold at 8 dB, which gave us 8 megabits. And then the mobile, which you can translate that as we want it to be extremely robust. And that's 4 dB signal noise, and that delivers about 4 megabits. So let's look really quickly at the results here. So this is just service availability. And it kind of goes like what you would expect, that the high data rate the high data rate modulation works actually pretty good. At 30 feet, get almost 80%, yeah, maybe like 75 to 80% of the sites got good reception, and it goes up as you go to the more robust, more robust settings, and the mobile did pretty well, and you can see that again, what you expect is that 30 feet performs better than 12 feet. So this is what's called the System Performance Index, and that's where you eliminate the sites that are below threshold where you just simply would not receive the signal. There's just not enough signal level to be received. So you're looking at a percentage of sites that got reception where you should have gotten reception. And that's a little better in indication of the performance of a system, where it's a good metric, particularly if you're going to compare things. And again, you see what you expect to see. What's interesting here is that for the mobile system, every place you should have gotten reception, you got reception, and that's nice. So here's a little bit more functional. This is at 30 feet, and this is a function of distance as you go away. If you kind of look, you see what you expect, which is everything is stays fairly consistent. And as you get farther away, the more fragile, the high data rate, more fragile, you lose that a little bit more. And eventually, when you get out to, in excess of 57 miles, 57 miles, 20% of sites get reception. But you look there that most robust is still going, and you can see also that, except for the highest data rate, which is again a little bit more fragile, there's some stay pretty consistent, out to 37, forward up to like 40 miles. So that's at 30 feet. Here's that data again, also at 12 feet. So this is just a summary of, there's lots of other data that we collected, but it's just a quick summary to give you a sense of the kind of work that we're doing out there. So just to summarize the test, the physical layer performed pretty well in the field. In some cases, and well, in most cases, not some, most cases, it performed better than what ATSC1, what you would expect with ATSC1. The adaptive flexibility of the physical layer, that is the ability to do pipes and have them be stable and receive data, that works. So again, it's good to know that the system works the way the theory says. The large majority failures were signal strength, so that's significant because it means it wasn't from multipath or other kinds of necessarily of interference, and that's extremely encouraging. So what are we going to do next? We've got a couple of things. We got additional field tests that we have coming up just as we roll into winter, and those are going to be LDM. So just talk a minute about LDM. So LDM, layer division multiplexing, is essentially is another way to get two different modulation coding combinations rather than physical layer pipes. And it's part of the ATSC3 system, and what you have is two signals. One is injected under this, and I'm kind of summarizing this. And so you have a base, essentially a base layer signal and an enhancement layer signal. So the one application of that is if you use a technology called scalable coding, where the video coder can take 4K video and break it into two different parts. You can send a base layer, or let's say an HD signal, in a base layer that is very robust. Everybody gets it. For those people who can get the enhancement layer, they would be able to get 4K. So that's an application of that. So we did some preliminary testing, mostly among modulators. We did that. We did this, I guess that, it's been a year ago, more than a year ago. It has proven out pretty well. So the Clever Logic receiver can receive LDM, and our Gates modulator can produce it. So we're going to go ahead and we verified that it worked. So we're going to go ahead and do some field tests and look at that data so we can put that in our library of stuff. We want to implement AC4 audio. That's been a challenge for a number of reasons. But we want to get it on the air full time with UHD. So we've made it work, and we've made some limited applications of it work with HD. VSB equipment can encode it, but that's stereo only. So the Olympic stuff we actually had on the air in AC4, but it was stereo only. So we really want to get the full blown AC4 immersive audio on the air. So we'll getting some help from Dolby, and both in Harmonic and Tem are working on working with us on getting that going. Closed captions and advanced emergency alerting. Two important things that are closed captions regulatorily required. We want to get that out there. AEA, I think you heard from Fiona early this morning, or first thing this morning, about advanced alerting, and we want to get that on the air. Downloading apps, and the reason that that's all those last three things there that I mentioned are important is because receiver manufacturers need some data test streams to test their sets. And so we want to go ahead and make sure we can get that up and running as soon as we can. We're going to be working with that actually starting this week to get these up and running, to make things as close to an operational TV station as it will be. Downloading apps, we've proven that it works. We know how to do it. We did it at the NAB show this last year. It was sort of done with prototypes and a little bit of chewing gum and some duct tape. So we want to make that a bit of a more real thing in there. And we'll probably also want to do some ad swapping. We did that also at the show, and we want to try to bring that to Cleveland, but we want to get these other AC4, the captions, the AEA, and the apps rolling. And also more receiver testing. So you can't always take the mountain to the Muhammad, so sometimes they'll have to come to us. But we have a great environment set up, sort of a viewing room set up in Cleveland where our folks can our friend from CTA can come in and bring receivers and just either let us use them, or they can come and spend a couple of days with us. So let me just a couple of acknowledges to my boss Lynn Claudie, who also runs this project. MSW folks, Dennis Wallace and RJ, RJ in particular. He's now on the third network rebuild of our six racks. The network part of ATSC3 is a little challenging. Dave Mitel and Gary Squignoli, also part of MSW, they're the ones out there in the winter. And Gary did our receiver testing program. WDAW, Brian Dick, who's the director of engineering there. Bob Chappell is the transmitter chief. Can't say enough about Bob. Anything we need, Bob has sitting around somewhere. And if he doesn't, he makes it. It's just he is a transmitter chief's transmitter chief. And of course, Bill Van Dyhoven, who's with as VP of engineering, I think, with I don't know if that's title right title, but with Tribune. And that's it. So if you got any questions.
Thank you, Kelly. Thank you very much. I do have a question, and perhaps I missed it. Are you doing any indoor receiver testing?
No, there aren't any plans, and there are two reasons. One, we found it's really, really difficult to find people to let you in their house for a couple hours. Secondly, we want to kind of take advantage of what's going on around Cleveland outdoors while we can, and we hopefully will have the opportunity to do some. But I don't think they're in the LDM that will do any indoor. Yeah, but anyway.
Okay. Any questions from the audience for Kelly? I'm looking around the room. I hear right, and I hope this is public information, but is Gary Scrignoli planning the ATSC 3.0 roadshow?
Yes, as far as I know.
That's great.
I have not heard that personally, but I've heard you're like the fourth person that has said it, so I'll take that as good confirmation. But also, I know that SBE is planning some stuff that I thought in addition maybe to the roadshow, and also NAB is working on some online courses to try to get the ball rolling.
And I think Gary and folks are looking for folks to host. So if there's anybody. We do have a question.
Actually, it's a comment. There's a group of people called the SBE that might be willing to be guinea pigs for your indoor testing. If you would make announcements at meetings and be willing to share the hardware, I'm sure that we'd find an engineer or two across the country that would be willing to help you.
Thanks. I appreciate that, and that's a really good idea. So right now we just have Cleveland. So we deal with the Cleveland. But one of the things we also want to do, if we can get a couple more receivers, is we actually already have reached out, although it was a while ago, to local SMPTE, SBE, to bring folks out, maybe have a meeting at this place. Like I said, this building used to be their studio. And so there's plenty of room. We have an area we can set up. So that's something that's on our dance card to do. And I think that's a good way that we would be able to drum up some folks to get it out to get some of those indoor sites. Thanks.
Any other questions? We do have another question.
I just wanted to say I'm Lewis Johnson. I'm in the Cleveland area. I'm an SBE member, IEEE, SMPTE, and Kelly, I would love to be one of the volunteers for the Cleveland area for an indoor testing. I'll be
All
in
right.
contact with you.
All right. Sounds great.
There you go. It's a cooperative effort, that's for sure. Thank you. Well, Kelly, thank you very much, and wish you good health and a speedy recovery, and maybe next year we can bring you back to Madison and see your lovely face.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Kent. I really appreciate all the effort. Thanks to you and Bill and everybody there that helped make this work.
Very good. Thanks.